Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. Before I introduce this morning's speaker, I want to thank everyone again for being flexible and patient with us as we transition TMR to a virtual platform. I would now like to introduce this morning's speaker, Nancy Eaton. Nancy Kern Eaton has been president of the United Way of Central New York since September of 2017. She has spent most of her career working in nonprofit organizations. Nancy has served in leadership roles at Arise, Salvation Army of the Syracuse Area, Syracuse Weed and Seed Community Partnership, Home Headquarters, and Housing Visions Unlimited. Nancy began her nonprofit career as a client advocate at the Erie County Mental Health Association. Nancy has served on numerous local boards and initiatives and is a graduate of the Leadership Greater Syracuse Class of 2000. She has been honored to receive awards including Key for Women Community Impact Award 2020, Outstanding Fundraiser for the Association of Fundraising Professionals, Women of Distinction for the New York State Senate, Champion for Children for the Boys and Girls Clubs, and others. Nancy and her husband, Doug, have four adult children and their spouses, as well as five grandchildren, with another one due in May. Though not a native of the region, Nancy is passionate about the wonderful people, cultural opportunities, and incredible beauty of the area. Please join me in welcoming Nancy Eaton.
Thank you, Emily, and good morning. I see so many friends, no one old, but long time. And folks that I hope will soon be friends. So it's wonderful to have an opportunity to be with you this morning. I hope you'll join me in a little bit of a journey as we think a little bit about what has been and also what may come. Many of you, and I also want to thank my colleague, Ray Manass, our Chief Marketing Officer, who is going to show you a slideshow this morning as I share some information. So many of you know, because I see a number of friends that are connected to us, our United Way has a long history in this community. In fact, it began on the steps, I think, of City Hall back in 1917, when the mayor of Syracuse called together 100 community leaders to present what he called his war plan for fighting poverty and need. I think he recognized that government alone wasn't the answer. He asked them to join him in speaking out throughout the community and inviting people to share and invest in one pool of resources that could be used to meet need. The goal was $600,000, and 3 weeks later, they had over $1.1 million, and this United Way began. So in 1921, this is our anniversary year, the Syracuse Community Chest was formed, and in 1972, renamed the United Way of Central New York. So one of the beauties of United Way is that while we are a part of a worldwide network and have that amazing brain power and research advocacy power, we are a local nonprofit organization. We have a local board of directors. We decide what our community needs are and how we can best meet them. So as many of you know, because you're connected to us, we, since our early days, have looked at funding the entire network of human services that people in our community need. And so the way that works is that companies and individuals hold United Way campaigns each year. People contribute. And then we have nonprofit organizations that go through a two-step process. The first is that we have community volunteers who are finance and governance folks, and they really look at the financial picture and the governance of an organization. If it meets our high standard, the agency is then invited to apply for program funding. And again, there are community volunteers who work with us and review the program applications. We look at needs because we're always monitoring ongoing needs. And then we make decisions about how we can have the greatest impact with the funding that the community has invested with us. We worked for the past couple of years under the leadership of Lisa Fasolo-Frischman, who chairs our community impact work, to really look carefully at what is United Way's role? What does the community want United Way to be investing in? And how can we have the greatest impact, knowing that there are other partners in the community who are playing roles and we're all looking together? And so we know that we can't boil the ocean, and we wanted to be very strategic in thinking about how we achieve this vision for our community, where truly every person has the opportunity to thrive. And so we came up with some clear community outcomes that we are specifically looking at as we partner with others and as we look at programs in which to invest. And if, as you look at these, you see it covers really the entire life spectrum, right? From the first moment of someone's life until their later years, looking at achieving success and really offering every person in our community the opportunity to succeed. And we had such ambitious goals for 2020, as I'm sure many of you did. And then about a year ago, something happened that caused us all to change the way we did things. And we were very proud, and I see partners quickly last year to work with the Central New York Community Foundation, Allen Reisman Foundation, and others, as we said, our community needs us. We're gonna allow everyone to invest in one fund so that we can respond quickly, efficiently, and think and act together to respond to needs. I cannot say enough about the leadership in our community. The county executive, and I'm hoping that he's feeling better every day, but the leadership from the county, the coordination with the city, our health department, our healthcare community, I have taken every opportunity and I will continue to do so. I cannot imagine a community that has done a better job of coming together and thinking together about how we respond to this worldwide public health crisis. And so through the COVID Community Support Fund, we raised $1.8 million with the initial $300,000 that the Community Foundation Board invested. Over 120 projects were funded. And we as funders met weekly at first. There was an online system so that nonprofits could immediately respond to the needs and apply. And we funded a number of things, including obviously food and technology so that organizations could continue to provide services, and really thinking about ensuring that people weren't left behind and left without the kind of help they needed. The other thing that happened immediately when the pandemic hit was that the folks who coordinate 2-1-1, so the contact community services organization that we're proud to fund to have 2-1-1, which is the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week hotline, they immediately kept track of which pantries were open, which organizations were still open, what were the needs. And in fact, when we realized fairly quickly that there were a number of senior citizens and others in the community who were not able to get out to get food, a special phone line was set up and contact answered that as well. And at one point we had over 2,000 people in this community that were registered to receive food delivered at home because they were not able to get out. We also, at the beginning of the pandemic, Ann Rooney called and said, can we mobilize volunteer CNY? And we said, of course. Within 10 days, we had 250 people registered to help, and in less than 2 weeks, 350 people. So we were proud to coordinate with Meals on Wheels, Rescue Mission, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, Peace, the county folks, to think about getting food to people, getting the food made. And again, the coordination among our entire community is something we can be really, really proud of as we've made our way and continue to push through as the pandemic hit. So we've been actively involved in relief efforts, whether it was milk distributions, just looking together. And the funding community has continued to meet on a very frequent basis as we've tried to maintain information on exactly what was happening and how we could best assist, whether it was food distribution to kids within the city and their families. The response really has been remarkable. And just as our healthcare community and our first responders have truly been heroic in their response, so too have our nonprofit frontline workers. I mean, so many of them right at the beginning said to their organizations, I don't work in the shelter, but if you need me in the shelter, that's where I'll be. And one of the things we did as United Way right at the beginning was we recognized that all of the nonprofits needed masks right away. And so we fortunately have Ty Shaw and CNY Uniforms Plus in the community. So we provided 4,000 masks to our area nonprofits, reusable masks, so that they could get their staff safely PPE'd, if you will, and so they could serve people in the community. And we've continued to be involved in the pandemic response, and yet we had our work to do. And our volunteers and our community impact team continued the work we had planned for 2020, although we modified and changed our plan a bit. Many of you know that typically we would allocate funds basically for a three-year commitment. So we would say to organizations, after our review process, assuming we raise enough money, for the next 3 years, you can count on this funding. It makes a big difference for the nonprofits to have that stability and to be able to do their work and count on that funding. But for 2021, we recognized that with so many things changing, we had to make a slight revision to our typical plan. And so we did a one-year funding cycle. And we had five teams of community reviewers that included subject matter experts that reviewed 99 program applications. And based on the amount of funding we had, and that was really always the bottom line, as Emily knows, because she used to help drive the process, we were able to fund 64 programs for this one-year cycle for a little over $3 million in funding directly to those 64 programs. And again, we knew what was happening as much as possible. So we knew the needs and we looked again at the outcomes that we had set out for ourselves. So you'll see programs here that you know and that the government invests in because we always provide sort of that budget gap funding. We never fund entire programs. So in our Thriving Children, about $500,000 to these programs, focusing on third grade literacy, funding a little over $200,000 for programs at these agencies, looking at youth development efforts. Again, these are agencies you know, programs that many, and I know there are a number of partner funders on this call, and so they too fund programs at these wonderful organizations. Looking at workforce development in these programs at these three organizations, mental health and substance abuse services have always been important to United Way, and they continue to be important. And so, again, about $500,000 a year is invested in programs at these organizations. And then our seniors. So we want to be sure that folks are able to live the best possible quality of life throughout their life. And so we are happily funding programs and always look to do more, certainly as the seniors in our community deserve the best possible life. I also know there are a lot of wonderful efforts going on, and we have folks with us this morning, Rita Riker, Andy Latcham, who are very involved in those efforts, new efforts with the community in the county. I'm excited about those as well for livability for all their years. Self-sufficiency is always something United Way has funded. And again, these are programs that we're proud to fund. And this year, probably more than ever, it was so hard to make decisions because all of the programs that applied to us are important programs in the community. And we wish we could provide funding to them all, but not yet. So these are the ones we're funding. And then basic needs has always been something that United Way has played a big role in funding in our community. It's something that is a given. I think for many of our donors, they really count on us to know what the needs are and then to ensure that most basic needs are the ones we focus on first, always. And then again, we think about how else can we meet community needs. So the programs you've seen are programs we are proud to provide funding to. And basic needs are something that we always look at. And I cannot imagine a time when United Way would not play a role in those. So with our program funding, as I said, agencies really count on our funding. So the $3 million that we're providing this year to agencies, it's a little more than that, leverages the required government match for programs that have funding requiring a match. And so this year, 27 of the 64 programs we're funding use our funding as match. And that leverages about $1.1 million from us, leverages $3.5 million more in that matching funds for the government. So the best way to think about it is if there's a $100,000 program, $25,000 from us leverages an additional $75,000 more in our tax dollars. So we're very proud to play that role, to provide that funding. And the agencies are very grateful to be able to say, we have our funding, we have our match, we can go forward. And that is what we do sort of with our campaign revenue each year. The majority of the revenue is used in this way. And yet we look beyond helping people today. And I want to credit Frank Lazarski, who led this organization for many years, for his vision in thinking about how United Way could partner in the community in collaborations, initiatives, looking at issues that impact people all across our community. So about 11 years ago, when literacy became an issue, the Literacy Coalition of Onondaga County was formed, and United Way is proud to be the home, so the fiscal agent of the Literacy Coalition, along with many other initiatives. So the Literacy Coalition, probably one of the best known things about it. And again, I know Peter Dunn is here and the Community Foundation is a huge funder of the Literacy Coalition. The Dolly Parton Imagination Library is an amazing program. We are one of the sort of the sites in the country that Dolly Parton folks refer people to. In fact, Kim Kemp, the program director, is often asked to mentor other communities looking at initiating a Dolly Parton Imagination Library program. Onondaga County is a funder of this program in the big way, provides the majority of the funding. And so when children are born in our community, they are registered. In fact, parents joke that the hospital won't let them leave until they've registered for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. So every child in our community is able to get a free book in the mail every month from the time they're born till they turn 5 years old. And I will share with you some interesting things that have happened during the pandemic with respect to the Dolly Parton Imagination Library. Normally, the majority of new registrations are from the hospitals. So the new parents registering their children. But what we found during the pandemic is that we have had sort of record numbers of parents registering who perhaps are people who moved here from other communities. So they might have a two-year-old or a three-year-old. And it's been very interesting as Kim has seen more and more registrations that aren't newborn babies, but little toddlers whose parents are somehow hearing about this. So it's been really nice to see. And another thing that happened during the pandemic, for the very first time, there was a glitch with the mail. So the books didn't arrive in December. And Kim had dozens and dozens of calls from parents saying, we didn't get our book. So we were thrilled to know that that's how important the books are to the parents and to their children. Literacy is a huge issue. And there have also been a number of other efforts in connection with the Literacy Coalition. We look at summer learning loss, third grade. We want to have third grade reading level by third grade. And also looking at the adult literacy. I know this is a group together today of people who pay attention to what's going on. So we all know that Ruth Colvin's Literacy CNY ceased operations, at least temporarily. We hope not forever, perhaps. But the adult literacy needs are very, very important. And so we, as the Literacy Coalition, are actually doing a study right now to look at what are the needs all across our community with respect to literacy, and particularly with respect to adults, because we do know there's such a need for services, and we're trying to craft our plan to make sure that we can work together to provide what adults need for literacy. And then we, a few years ago, Onondaga Citizens League did a study that Lori Black was one of the chair people of, and that led to the formation of the Early Childhood Alliance, which Lori has very, very capably led, done an excellent job in leading the Early Childhood Alliance. So essentially, I bet there are people with us this morning who were part of the Onondaga Citizens League study. So you know that in New York State, surprisingly, the first time all children take the same test is third grade. So that is the first time we have any statewide data on how kids are doing. And what we saw and really came to light in a big way in the Onondaga Citizens League study was that more and more children in our community were not passing the third grade proficiency exams. And in fact, to give you an example, in 2018, which was after the ECA formed, 38% of Onondaga kids in Onondaga County passed the third grade exam. So is it a community-wide issue? For sure. And did we need the Early Childhood Alliance to come together, bringing educators, pediatricians, human service organizations, business members, the entire community together to think about how can we support parents and children so that every child gets to kindergarten ready to succeed? And I would encourage you, Emily, to think about having Lori come to a presentation, because the Early Childhood Alliance is extraordinary. The amazing work that has been done. There is a business council, and we've implemented some really important initiatives. Talk, Read, Sing. Many of you, I'm sure, have seen the billboards and the messaging. And that is all done through pediatricians who are, of course, trusted messengers. I shouldn't say all, but pediatricians are a big part of that program. Help Me Grow, again, we are a Help Me Grow site, and there's coordination between 211. So when they're answering the phone, they're checking in if the person they ask, do you have a child under six, so that they can connect them to Help Me Grow. Again, looking at our littlest ones, because the reality is 85% of a person's brain is developed by age five. So it is vital that we are investing in children at the most important time. So we right now, and Lori would tell you, spend a lot of money on kids K through 12 and almost none before they get to school. We need to flip that so that we are investing in children at the best time. And ultimately, we won't need so many programs helping kids who are struggling when they're in school, because they'll have arrived at school ready to succeed. So we are very proud to partner with the others, Allen Foundation, Community Foundation, Reisman Foundation, and we are the fiscal home of the Early Childhood Alliance at United Way. So we are proud to claim Lori and the other employees who coordinate the Early Childhood Alliance as United Way team members. And when we think about it, our community's future depends on our littlest ones, including the workforce. So as we think about helping kids come to school ready, we are also working in partnership with Center State CEO and all the other funders locally to think about how do we help adults who are not either employed at all or who have never really successfully gotten a pathway to a career. And so Center State came up with a very innovative model to look at underemployed or unemployed folks and to look at businesses and industries where there was a big need for workers and how could people be trained to be placed in those jobs and be successful in those jobs. So we were one of the first funders of Work Train, and we continue to be a funder along with the foundations. And the team at Center State has done an extraordinary job. They have accessed a number of grants from national partners and organizations. we can all be very proud of the work that is being done here has really received national attention. So WorkTrain, again, a wonderful thing that could be an entire TMR presentation for sure, is they've placed people in specific industries. So it started in healthcare because there was such a big need. Loretta was a huge partner, has been. Kim and her team have done an extraordinary job. And so WorkTrain is a model that is based on knowing people's skills and helping give them the education they need. Many of them, most have gone through the Educational Opportunity Center. Tim Penix and the team have done an amazing job of partnering in WorkTrain and then again placing in industry. So right now WorkTrain is in healthcare, manufacturing, construction, and now looking at coding, and a lot is planned for that. So I won't go into it, but I will tell you that there is a lot coming through the big picture of the workforce development efforts and the partnerships. And it's really been an amazing vision that has been created by the Center State team, Mayor Walsh and his team, the trades industries, the trade unions. There's a lot coming, and Syracuse Build, which many of you I know have heard of, WorkTrain's a piece of that, and there's so much more to come. We also at United Way do some things every year that a lot of folks don't even know about, although they're things we do. And so one of them is we're proud to coordinate with others, the Cash Coalition. So that is a program where credit unions, business people, community members come together and think about how can we support financial literacy? How do we help people get on a pathway to not only paying their bills, but going well beyond that and thinking about building wealth? And a piece of the CAS Coalition is coordinating the VITA program, which is Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. So during the pandemic, the amazing group of folks that come together to do this prepared over 3,000 tax returns. And the average income of the folks that had their tax returns done for free was $27,500. And this community, people in our community, received over $6 million in tax refunds through that program. So when you think about the impact on those families and on our economy, it's very significant. So the benefit of the VITA program is that it's for working families. The threshold last year was $55,000-$56,000 a year, maximum income for a free tax return. And we make sure that people benefit from the earned income tax credit as well as the child care tax credit. The other thing that we're proud to do every year is coordinate the EFSP program. So the Emergency Food Shelter Program, which are FEMA funds that go to United Way worldwide and then come down to communities. So we have what we call our local board that is made up of organizations and community members. And this year we received an extra allocation through the CARES Act. So in a typical year, we get about $180,000 to $200,000. And this year we got that regular annual allocation as well as a $250,000 CARES allocation. Those funds are used for served food, so Samaritan Center Rescue Mission, as well as other food. So that's food pantries. The food bank does an amazing job of coordinating with over 90 food pantries, I think, for the EFSP program. And I believe I saw my friend Lynn High on this meeting. So again, another community partner that has done an incredible, incredible job during this pandemic. And Ray, before you go on, I do want to give credit to one organization that's a partner in EFSP that, again, during the pandemic, we, I think, all learned many things. And as much as there were challenges, there were opportunities, and some important things have changed during the pandemic. So with our CARES allocation of FEMA funds, Interfaith Works had a really innovative idea they wanted to try. And the FEMA local board, our EFSP board, said, Interfaith Works, if you're willing to do all the work, we're happy to give you a little bit of money. And so they came up with this idea of connecting more of the churches, the smaller churches that may not be food pantries or certified food pantries, some of the mosques, connecting more with the refugee community. And they created a program that they called Food Pantry Partners. And it went incredibly well. In fact, it is now a more formalized program. We will fund it again this year. And they were able to get 8 new food pantries certified with Food Bank. They've created 4 hubs within the city for food distribution. And it's an example of collaboration and the type of thing that our community, I think, does so incredibly well by thinking, communicating, connecting, and working together. So I want to just, you know, again, many things have challenged us this past year, but there have also just been incredibly wonderful ideas that people have brought together and tried, and some really wonderful things have come out of it. We also, during the pandemic, continued our Gifts in Kind program without a stop, and that we have dozens of organizations that are members, and we are able to get new items and distribute them to them, and also gently used items. Office furniture often is something we help coordinate. We, through Bank of America, were able to get 150,000 masks donated and 50,000 hand sanitizers. So we've been really excited to distribute those to more than 30 churches, grassroots groups, nonprofit organizations, because as organizations are trying to double mask, we're trying to help them fill that need. So we're grateful to Bank of America for making that possible. Also under our Big United Way umbrella is the Housing and Homeless Coalition. So as many of you know, you've been involved. Every community has to work together to apply to HUD for their funding. So that's called their continuum of care. And we've done it here in this community for decades. In 2017, the Housing and Homeless Coalition came under United Way, and we are the grantee and happily the home for the Housing and Homeless Coalition. So incredible work being done. They've been very involved in housing efforts. And before the pandemic, we were one of the few communities in the United States that had been decreasing homelessness every year, something we can be really proud of. And we have a database system that we coordinate for now 4 counties, but 3 counties are actually our HUD-funded areas. So our team, the Housing and Homeless Coalition, and all of the providers could tell you any day how many people stayed in shelter that night before. It's an amazing program. There's incredible coordination. And one of the things they've done is they have people who have lived experience of homelessness, both adults and youth, that are part of the advisory council for the Housing and Homeless Coalition. So people who've lived through the experience of homelessness are helping to make the decisions about what the Housing and Homeless Coalition does, which is really important. And then in 2019, Syracuse became one of the 22 sites in the United States that have financial empowerment centers. So Mayor Walsh's leadership and vision and the work of his team, along with partners, made Syracuse a successful applicant to be selected by the Cities for Financial Empowerment. We are proud to be the fiscal nonprofit partner in the Syracuse Financial Empowerment Center. Again, funding friends that are on this meeting are partners as well. And Syracuse has done an extraordinary job. So the door is sort of opened, although it's not one center, it's actually several locations where intensive financial counseling services are offered. Home headquarters is the employer of the counselors and, coordinates the counseling program. So even during a pandemic, Syracuse, believe it or not, last year achieved 35% of the total results for all 22 sites in the country. Once again, Syracuse shows we know how to do things here. So look at these numbers, over $1.2 million in debt reduced for those 636 clients, almost $600,000 in savings established, 500 delinquent accounts reduced, and 200 positive credit outcomes. We are doing this right in Syracuse. It's an amazing program. And one of the things that's important about it is that it is not just for lower income folks, although those are the people who benefit most. A lot of folks across the income spectrum have credit issues, debt issues, don't really know how to do a financial plan. So this counseling program that provides one-on-one assistance is really essential. And I applaud the Walsh administration for their leadership in bringing it here. And we are proud to be a part of it at United Way. The other thing we did during this past year, one of our goals for 2020 had been to really amplify and really enhance our equity efforts. So our team early in the year did the 21-day Racial Equity Habit Building Challenge, which was started by Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. and Debbie Irving. We found it to be a very powerful experience. And so we were very proud in October to partner with almost 100 organizations and 3,500 plus community members registered to be part of the 21-day Racial Equity Habit Building Challenge. It was really an important way for people to begin their journey, to really become more aware and develop a better social justice equity lens that through which they could look or continue their journey. And so we received such incredible response that we realized this was going to be an ongoing way. United Way could be a resource to the community. So we began the 12-week journey on MLK Day, and we're continuing to meet with others to look at how we can best play a role. We're not a training provider. We are looking more to be a resource in terms of information, connecting people, perhaps sharing what others are doing, and thinking together with the community about what United Way can do to help in these efforts. We did receive a large gift from a donor who was so pleased by our equity work. And so we're looking to expand the work with his generous gift. So thinking ahead, as we're all continuing to move through, and we're going to get to the other side of this pandemic, I would be remiss. I know there are board members on this meeting with us. If I didn't tell you how you could get involved with United Way, if you are not. So we have a couple of affinity groups, Women United, and there are a number of members with us today, and also Emerging Leaders United. So these are both groups that are for donors to us who want to get more involved in the community, who want to network with one another. Evelyn Ingram, as you can see there, chairs our Women United group. Laura Surway played a huge role in helping us create that group. And so we'd love to tell you more about those groups. We have a leadership society for donors who give $1,000 a year or more, and our volunteer CNY efforts. Emily knows the website well, and we are proud to offer that site so that any type of nonprofit can list their opportunities and people can easily search. We also are in the beginning stages of launching a local council to promote Board Strong, which Peter Dunn is on the board of and has helped create. And essentially that's a training tool for people to learn more about what's involved in being on a board. So people, if they choose to join a board, they understand their responsibilities and the important role they can play as a board member. And it will also be a resource for people who are looking for board opportunities. Those opportunities can be listed on Board Strong. So we will be sending more information about that, and our volunteer CNY site connects people to that. So what do we see coming? And then I'd be happy to have a conversation. We continue to meet as funders. We are looking at food access and the availability and making sure people in our community can get food. I will tell you that when the pandemic started for the first, I would say 10 to 12 weeks, we had daily calls with people in the county and the nonprofit partners to think about getting food to people, and the Rescue Mission, Salvation Army, Catholic Charities, and Peace making food that was delivered. We continue to have those conversations looking at food access for all, and the food bank continues to play a great role. The housing crisis, I think we all know that the moratorium on evictions, while it was a lifesaver for communities, because being homeless during a pandemic is unimaginable. And yet, thousands of people in this community are going to be at risk of homelessness when the eviction moratorium is lifted. So we are working with the county, the city, the funders to monitor. The county is doing an amazingly proactive job in trying to get ahead of this. So they have on their website now a survey that landlords are completing so this county can get a sense of how much is owed in back rent. And people are calling, or they're going to actually have an online system so tenants can register. We're talking thousands of tenants and millions, tens of millions of dollars. So you've heard about it as a national issue. It is certainly a very important community issue here. And government can't solve it all, because no matter how much government funding comes, there's always an income limit. And there are going to be folks who are not going to qualify for that assistance. So we will be continuing to monitor that going forward as we try to think about how we can keep people in our community from becoming homeless. The last two things I'll say quickly, obviously they are people who are still not working. And so first of all, we don't know how they're gonna pay their rent or their mortgage, but also they may not ever be able to work back in the fields that they've had been working in. And so Center State is doing an amazing job with others of looking at how can we retrain folks? How can we help folks reimagine their career pathway? Because if they were in the hospitality industry, as an example, if it comes back, it probably will never come back the way it was, and certainly not for a period of time. So how can folks access work that will help them actually have a stable economic base for their family? And then mental health issues are a huge, they've always been a huge need. And we are seeing even children who academically, it has never been a struggle. I'm sure you've seen the news about the mental health issues that the pediatricians are seeing. So again, the availability of mental health services is gigantic in terms of being a need. So we are looking at that as well. And then the one last thing I'll say that I forgot to say, as we think about our equity efforts, the other thing I want to mention is that Center State is doing incredible work. Dr. Johanna Rogers is leading those efforts, and Center State is trying to work with the business community to really help think about racial and economic equity. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned that Center State has doing a great job with that. So I am happy to hear comments and have a conversation with so many amazing community members who are here.
Great. Thank you so much, Nancy. I got a question already. So let's go with, so how are retired residents of Central New York approached to be United Way donors?
That's a great question. So in fact, one of our biggest challenges, what often happens, many people connect United Way initially through a workplace. So you start working and they say, oh, could you please give $1, $2, $5 out of your paycheck? That's certainly how I got involved when I first got out of college. And so, you know, if the company tells us the names of the donors, because not all of them do, then we are able to have hopefully a connection where we can be communicating with folks. We often don't know when people retire, and we don't necessarily have a way to contact them. So I would say that is one of the things that we hope to do more of. And if anyone is part of this conversation today and wants to get involved with us, the next group we're trying to form is sort of Continue United, we thought of calling it. Instead of calling it like Retirees United, we thought maybe we would call it Continue United. But we are looking to really think about how we can offer people who still, I mean, obviously many, I see so many people here who may be retired from a paying job, but you're spending more time than you used to work volunteering. So it's something where we were working on, and certainly not something we've done well enough at all.
Great, thank you. So you talked about it briefly, the lasting effects that we're going to see from COVID, especially children falling behind in school and the mental health effects. So do you see some shifts in maybe where your program funding goes, or maybe a new initiative around that?
That's an important thing we're looking at. You know, one of the things we had hoped was that by this time, we would be optimistic about doing another three-year funding cycle beginning in 2022. I think that's unlikely because we still have so much that is unknown about, and really we're trying to monitor how our local nonprofits are doing. Again, the funding community, we are all looking at these things together. So we're really trying to keep track of how organizations are doing, and we don't want them to fall apart. So as many of you know, the Community Foundation will support organizations that are looking at mergers, affiliations. So the Community Foundation provides funding to help them assess those opportunities. So perhaps some organizations will recognize the value of joining together. But to your question, Emily, what I would say is I think we will again be looking to subject matter experts to work with us to think about how we can best meet the needs our community has. And what I will say is that I think we are blessed to have county leadership that is so focused on, first of all, helping people in poverty. I mean, they are very much in tune with the real needs of our people. This is not an administration that is out of touch. Ann Rooney, I think Ryan said the other day he sees double Ann Rooney, and I thought that would be great if we could clone Ann Rooney because she's so darn busy that if we had two of her, it would be great. But there's no question that we are all going to continue to have to talk about how we best address the needs of so many in our community, whether it's adults who don't have work and they don't know how they're going to have work, or they still don't have the ability to pay their rent. I mean, even if we somehow manage to help landlords with a portion of back rent, how do we help people who still can't pay the rent going forward? So the sort of the housing crisis is big. How do we help kids get back on track? I mean, they've lost so much socially, emotionally, educationally. This is a big lift. And I'm hopeful the Biden administration is going to really have leadership around these issues. I think having a Dr. Jill Biden will help us in terms of being able to think about education and kids' needs.
Great. Thanks so much. So next question, on the reverse or the inverse of the retiree question, many folks might be moving to Syracuse but are working remotely from companies who are not local. What strategies are in place to solicit younger donors?
We fortunately brought on a couple of really amazing dynamic marketing folks to our team about a little over a year ago, year and a half ago. And so we are looking closely at how we do that. We've done a lot of work locally. I hope you've heard of a company called Drive Research, which is a local firm that started by George Kuhn that does really great market research. So they're actually, hopefully we're gonna be having them do a study in the coming months of younger people. What are their interests? What matters to them? How do we reach them? How do we involve them in the community? We know that younger workers, one of the things they do when they look at potential employers is, does the employer support involvement in the community? So that is definitely a value that younger workers have. And one of the things we're trying to do at United Way is really give people a menu of options so that we're not sort of saying, here's how you participate with us. We want to say, here's the whole range of ways you can be part of us and let us know what works for you. We've also launched a new effort for the local business community because, you know, for many years, United Way largely was funded by people and the large employers, right? So just as an example, and I know many of you know this, when New Venture Gear closed, the employees of New Venture Gear donated $500,000 a year to United Way here. So that money was immediately gone. And Helen Hudson, who's our community services liaison among the many hats she wears in our community, still is connected to some folks who never did manage to get totally back on their feet after New Venture closed. So, you know, we need to revise our model so that we're connecting with these young entrepreneurial local companies that may have 40 employees, and that sort of the traditional United Way model may not fit for them. Well, we want to offer them a way to invest in their community, be involved in their community that works best for them. So that's a big effort. Elise Holstein is our board member who's leading that effort with Ryan, a number of board members and others. So we're excited about that, but it is clearly, we need a new United Way going forward for people who want to be involved and they want to tell us how they want to be involved.
Great, thanks so much. Next question, how does your $3 million in funds each year compare with cities like Buffalo, Rochester, and Albany?
Rochester, because of George Eastman, I think set a course of philanthropy in that community that continues. And then of course you probably heard Mackenzie Scott for some reason chose to give $20 million to Rochester and five to Albany. And she did give $1 million to our local YW. So we don't know how that happened. In fact, I will tell you my colleagues at those United Ways thought it was a scam. They literally had me convinced that there was really this person wanting to give them millions of dollars with no restrictions. but Rochester has always done better. They're, you know, sort of Xerox and Kodak and all of that. Honestly, M&T commissioned a study back in 2015 to compare giving in our community to giving in those other upstate communities. And we fell behind. Rochester by a lot, Albany also by some, and then Buffalo was about the same. So Rochester's campaign every year, just as an example, is like $20 million. So it's a sort of a different ball game. But ours at the height was 10. So, but again, that was with $500,000 from New Venture. So we are certainly reinventing how we reach out to the community and how we bring younger people in and businesses that wouldn't be at sort of the traditional United Way pitch, if you will.
Great, thanks. Next question. How has the pandemic affected United Way's ability to fundraise?
I would say two answers to that. One is I'm very proud of our team. They've done an amazing job of just whatever we needed, we somehow figured out how to do. So we were, as much as possible, we tried to do virtual presentations. We've really become quite adept at Zoom or Webinar, whatever all these things are, webinars and Google Meet and all of those things. So we've been delighted to be able to present. And in fact, what we found is if we're able to do a presentation at a company, we'll have more participation now than we used to. I mean, if they used to say, hey, everybody, we're going to have United Way come and present in the lunchroom, you know, we might get a good attendance, we might not. But because people can be sitting at their desk eating their lunch and just click on the computer, we're, I think, getting more response in that way. But we did have companies that weren't able to do a United Way campaign because their employees were all laid off. So it was kind of a mixed bag. I think that the companies that were still in business, they really understood that now more than ever, our community needs us. And I think they really, our donors have really told us they understand they get a return on their investment. They really know how carefully we are stewards and investors of their funds to make a difference for people in the community. We did, many of you know, I see faces, companies can do e-pledge campaigns, which means that each employee gets a unique login that they can make their pledge directly online and the company will take whatever they want out of their paycheck each time. We did 60% more e-pledge campaigns this year. So less paper, more connections, but you know, there are many workplaces where people aren't sitting at computers. So again, we had to adjust to make sure that we could get information to people and allow them to participate in any way they could. And some of our leadership donors, I will say, and there are some on this meeting, gave more because I think they recognized our community needs an awful lot of help and they counted on us to help invest that money to make a difference.
Thank you. Next question. In terms of your assessment of emerging trends, will your efforts to meet the mental health needs of our community include a focus on addiction and recovery?
We are pleased to provide some support for that. We actually this year are supporting it less than we have in the past. Again, I think the benefit of what we're doing locally is that we are so closely connected. I see Peter Dunn and Bob Falter and Meg O'Connell and our funding friends almost as much as I see my husband. So we are all talking all the time and trying to think about how can we really do this together. And you know, when we have those funders meetings, we also have the county and city there. Deputy Mayor Sharon Owens has been, I don't know how she does what she does. So again, I think there isn't enough money. I mean, government doesn't have enough. The philanthropic community doesn't have enough. But I do think that our community can count on us to make the best possible decisions about what we do with the funding we have. But addiction and substance abuse are huge issues. Our suicide rates are up. So clearly, that's a very, very important thing. And I'm delighted that we have a majority leader who is from New York State, who actually likes New York State, and who knows Syracuse. And I will tell you that many of you, I hope, know we have Syracuse United shirts, that we have the SU brand logo we were given permission to use. So as soon as President Biden was elected, we made sure that we sent a whole box of Syracuse United shirts to our majority leader, who promised, his staff promised, they would get them to the White House. And I have to credit SU alum Raymond Nassa, our chief marketing officer, with immediately saying, well, you know, President Biden's going to wear a Syracuse United shirt because he's a proud SU alum. So let's hope we're all seeing that orange collar when he's wearing his suits. But so I'm hopeful that this new administration will shed some light on ways to think differently about how we help people across that entire spectrum of need.
Thank you so much. Unfortunately, we are out of time. So thank you, Nancy, for just talking about all the needs and everything. I'm sure we all learned a lot. So please join me in thanking Nancy Eaton.
Thank you, everyone. It's great to see you.